would like to welcome you all to the November meeting of the Gonzaga Socratic Club. It's good to see all of you here. Welcome. Thanks for coming. The Gonzaga Socratic Club is an organization devoted to philosophical inquiry into the Christian worldview, and we cover lots of issues that are related to that. Dr. Kreese over here in the corner talked about St. Thomas Aquinas in our September meeting, and Dr. Eric Cunningham talked about interreligious dialogue in our meeting last month. However, this is a very special meeting. It's the first time a student presenter has brought something to the Gonzaga Socratic Club, and so we're very excited about that. Chris Sparks is a junior majoring in philosophy with a minor in religious studies, and he's also completing a concentration in Catholic studies, I guess because he thinks there's not enough work yet, so he'll probably think of something else in addition to that. He is probably known to many of you as a commentator in the Gonzaga Bulletin. He also writes for the Gonzaga Witness and for Charter, and he plays tuba in the pep band, so if you look for him during Gonzaga basketball games, you'll see him there tootling along. Chris has been interested in Christian apologetics since high school, and if you talk to him very long, you'll probably hear a couple of quotations from important texts from the Catholic Church about matters about faith and education and so forth. So Chris's topic today is, his talk is titled Ad Fontes, and he's going to be looking at Gonzaga's Catholic identity using some of those classic central texts from the Catholic Church. So if you would, welcome Chris to our meeting today.
I can talk over here and that'll pick up, right?
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Hello, everyone. I've got to admit, this is a lot more people than I ever expected. Honored to be presenting to you all today. I've got to say I have a much greater appreciation for the work that professors do on a regular basis to prepare something this long. My topic is Gonzaga's Catholic identity as laid out in the Church's documents. I will focus on a few major documents, drawing out main themes and discussing briefly the norms set down in order to ensure such characteristics are present in Catholic universities. On October 25th, 2007, a GU news release appeared on the university website announcing a new GU identity campaign. I'm sure many of you have seen the new signs out on the lampposts. One aspect of the campaign is the new Gonzaga Promise. Gonzaga University challenges students through a personal learning experience that is grounded in our Jesuit, Catholic, and humanistic identity. Within a caring community, Gonzaga inspires and transforms people to shape a better world through education, character, service, and faith. Gonzaga, then, can be summed up in the words Jesuit, Catholic, and humanistic. This is our identity. These marks lead the university mission statement as well. Gonzaga University belongs to a long and distinguished tradition of humanistic, Catholic, and Jesuit education. We, the trustees and regents, faculty, administration, and staff of Gonzaga, are committed to preserving and developing that tradition and communicating it to our students and alumni. Notice that the mission commits the whole university community to maintaining all three aspects of the mission in the community, and these aspects are presented in a unified way. It would appear that no one can be taken in isolation from the other two. They work together or they work against each other. Unless there is a common commitment to the entirety of the mission, one part will be emphasized over the other two at the expense of portions of the university community. But a quality of emphasis is not the whole picture, for each is tied into the other two. Jesuit would not be possible, would not exist without Catholic. For the Jesuits are, as we all know, the Jesuits are a religious order of men in the Roman Catholic Church. Its official name is the Society of Jesus. Founded by Ignatius of Loyola in the 16th century, the Society became the spearhead of the Counter-Reformation. And humanism. One of the three points. Humanism, the Western-style humanism, which would appear to be the university's focus, judging from the special place given to Western culture in the university's mission statement. Therefore, in addition to our primary emphasis on Western culture, we seek to provide for our students some opportunity to become familiar with the variety of human cultures. with this emphasis on the Western humanism, which also arose out of Catholic culture and scholarship done in the years around the Reformation, around the time the Jesuits were founded as well. So all of these tie together historically, all these tie together in the mission, all these should tie together in the education. The Catholic Church, however, preceded both movements by many years and gave birth to both, to the Jesuits directly and to humanism through the monastery libraries, the funding of the Renaissance, and the creation of universities in Europe. So where Catholic is a source of both Jesuit and humanistic, the Catholic identity is not a lesser offshoot of either. It is therefore relevant to direct one's attention to the Church's documents on Catholic universities in order to understand the whole identity of the university, all its aspects, in greater depth. The Church has emphasized repeatedly down through the years the immense importance of Catholic education. Father Maher's social and civilness class brought that home very thoroughly, as we saw the popes repeatedly defending and proclaiming the right of parents to have their children educated as they saw fit. And for Catholic parents, the faith is to be part of the training their children receive. So important is Catholic education in the Church's estimation that canon law states, parents and those who take their place are bound by the obligation and possess the right of educating their offspring. Catholic parents also have the duty and right of choosing those means and institutions through which they can provide more suitably for the Catholic education of their children, according to local circumstances. Parents also have the right to that assistance to be furnished by civil society, which they need to secure the Catholic education of their children. So not only is the Church supposed to provide education as part of its mission, Catholic parents are required to take advantage of that to the best extent that they can. So whether it be you send your kids to public school, but also have them trained in the faith on the side, CCD, or you send them to Catholic schools straight through as far as possible. A Catholic school, then, has an obligation to the students and their parents or guardians to faithfully instruct the student in the faith while still doing a good job at the sort of education available at non-Catholic schools. No Catholic kid should have to be less prepared for life because they're going to an inferior Catholic school than going to a good public school. You've got to have the good faith and the good work. As C.S. Lewis said, we are not merely called to do good works, but also to do good work. The people obedient to the... Yeah. This is speaking of Catholic education in the most general of terms. What is the job of the Catholic universities? What special charisms are peculiar to Catholic higher education? For the sake of the present discussion, I will use two documents predominantly. Brevissimum Educationis, and I apologize for my terrible Latin, the Declaration on Christian Education that came out of Vatican II, and Ex Cordia Ecclesiae, out of the heart of the Church. The Apostolic Constitution on Catholic Universities, written and promulgated by the late great Pope John Paul II in 1990. This is the latest of the documents. There were others before this on, you know, the whole span of Catholic universities, but this Ex Cordia is still in effect. And so is the norm for the world church, not just for the U.S. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops also produced a document titled Ex Corde Ecclesiae, an application to the United States, which is the local implementation of Ex Corde. However, it is the vision presented in Ex Corde that informs the local implementation. Also, Rome is to the local church as the federal government is to the state or city governments. So, it makes more sense to look at the Constitution to discover the rights and duties of the citizens than to look at the city charter, where Ex Corde and local norms conflict, Ex Corde trumps, basically. In the interests of a decent presentation, I shall not merely take the documents one at a time and read them to you, as I was initially tempted to do. The documents have authority, great depth of scholarship, and the wisdom and authority of the teaching magisterium and the Church behind them, and I don't. But to spare you all, I shall focus on certain major themes JP2 sets forth in Ex Corde, drawing on the other documents to flesh out the picture, and set forth the vision of Vatican II, John Paul II, and the U.S. bishops for us here at Gonzaga. According to Ex Corde, a Catholic university is to be a place that seeks, shares, and preserves truth. By vocation, the Universitas Magistrorum et Scholarium is dedicated to research, to teaching, and to the education of students who freely associate with their teachers in a common level of knowledge. With every other university, it shares that gaudium de veritate, the joy in the truth, joy of truth. So precious to St. Augustine, which is that joy of searching for, discovering, and communicating truth in every field of knowledge. Through research and scholarship, truth is discovered. Through teaching, truth is passed on. And in this transmission, truth is preserved. But John Paul also points out that a Catholic university must do another great service to the world, that of defending the very existence of truth. Following the thought expressed in his encyclical Veritatis Splendor, Ex Corde says, "The present age is in urgent need of this kind of disinterested service, namely of proclaiming the meaning of truth, that fundamental value without which freedom, justice, and human dignity are extinguished." This is a foundational point for the Church. This is an absolutely vital point for modern Catholic relations with the rest of the world. In the name of tolerance, relativism is creeping into many aspects of human life. The belief that something is all right for the other, because morality is a subjective affair. Yet without some objective ethical claims, without some objective truth about human dignity accessible to human reason, without this, there can be no freedom, justice, and human dignity. In the absence of universal truths about human nature, how can one claim there are universal human rights and freedoms? How can one be just in the absence of an objective standard of justice? How can one guarantee human dignity if the existence of the grounds for that human dignity may be legitimately accepted or rejected, depending on the person you speak to? By defending the existence and accessibility of truth, the Church defends humanity, defends true humanism, and defends all against all. Among the truths the Church defends are the truths of faith. The popular view in the modern world is that the truths of faith have nothing to say to the realm of reason, and that reason cannot touch faith, faith being a purely private affair. This would then seem to put the Catholic Church at odds with the whole realm of truth, and thus reduce the possible scope of the Church's educational mission. But the Catholic University is not to accept this intellectual horizon. We are, rather, to challenge it in obedience to Vatican II. I might just paraphrase some of these longer quotes for you guys. Individual subjects are to be pursued according to their own principles and liberty of scientific inquiry, so that a deeper understanding in all realms of knowledge may be achieved, but at the same time the university is to make sure that faith and reason are synthesized, that the Catholic faith is brought into dialogue with these truths. So there is to be no discipline, no area of study at the university absent the theological aspect. Done especially in accordance with the example of the Doctors of the Church and of St. Thomas Aquinas. Thus, there is to be accomplished a public, enduring, and pervasive influence of the Christian mind in the furtherance of culture. We're not just supposed to be doing this in a little isolated thing. The professors are supposed to be taking this out of the university and into their conferences, into their papers, into their public work as well. This is to be the university's work in the world, evangelization of the student body, of the inner community, and also being a witness into the intellectual life of the world. Note especially the emphasis on St. Thomas Aquinas, who remains the Church's theologian par excellence. With his successful synthesis of Aristotle's thought and rules of logic with the Catholic faith, he provided the invaluable service to the Church of showing exactly how rigorous logic and devout Catholic faith could meet, how the Church could learn from non-Catholic cultures without surrendering orthodoxy, and gave an example of how to achieve a successful synthesis of faith and reason without compromising either. Because of all this, his thought and method should be a part of a Catholic education. This synthesis was a theme of such importance to John Paul II that he dedicated an entire encyclical to it, Fides et Ratio. In Ex Corde, John Paul echoes the call to this synthesis. A Catholic university's privileged task is to unite existentially, by intellectual effort, two orders of reality that too frequently tend to be placed in opposition, as though they were antithetical. The search for truth and the certainty of already knowing the font of truth. Here we see another of the special gifts the Catholic Church has to offer. If faith and reason are two lanes in the highway to truth and not two points of opposition, demanding a decision between mysticism or science, then there can be a true dialogue and cooperative relationship between them. They are not foes, not competitors greedy for adherence in a zero-sum game, Enlightenment Department of Public Safety versus Inquisition. They are rather collaborators, seeking a common goal of immense value, and the more likely to make a successful journey because of their cooperation. The practical consequences of this period for university life are made clear later in Ex Corde. The Church, accepting the legitimate autonomy of human culture and especially the sciences, recognizes the academic freedom of scholars in each discipline in accordance with its own principles and proper methods, and within the confines of the truth and the common good. So, as my dad loves to say, yes, there's a great deal of freedom, and yes, there are boundaries, but the question has never been boundaries or no boundaries. The question has always been, where do you put the boundaries? there will be no university that is absolutely boundaryless in its pursuit of truth. We have a problem with guys who forge research and plagiarize and all that. You know, we aim at within certain confines of discipline. Catholic University, yes, there are additional boundaries, but because of the confines of the truth and the common good, not arbitrary. The Catholic University will pursue truth wherever it finds it, in whatever subject, in all subjects, because of the Catholic belief in the unity of truth. By means of a kind of universal humanism, the Catholic University is completely dedicated to the research of all aspects of truth, and their essential connection with the supreme truth, who is God. So there again you see both freedom to find truth and also the connection between faith and reason, theology, and all the other disciplines. It does this without fear, but rather with enthusiasm, dedicating itself to every path of knowledge, aware of being preceded by him who is the way, the truth, and the life, the Logos, whose spirit of intelligence and love enables the human person, with his or her own intelligence, to find the ultimate reality, of which he is the source and end, and who alone is capable of giving fully that wisdom without which the future of the world would be in danger. So the reason why it is an integral part of the faith to pursue truth in all disciplines is because we believe God is truth. The more you discover truth, the further you seek truth, the closer you get to God. A universal humanism. Though grounded in the historically Western European experience of the Catholic Church, we are to be interested in all cultures, not merely because people from all nations, all continents, all experiences and backgrounds are becoming or have long been members of the Catholic Church, but because we are to be interested in humanity. We are to study and engage human culture. In Ex Corde, John Paul says, there is only one culture, that of man, by man, and for man. And thanks to her, Catholic universities, and their humanistic and scientific inheritance, the Church, expert in humanity, as my predecessor Paul VI expressed it at the United Nations, explores the mysteries of humanity and of the world, clarifying them in the light of revelation. We are then free as students and teachers to study all human experience, all culture, all truth, required to do so, in fact, the ultimate in academic freedom. But how is this universal scholarship distinct from the work done at a secular university? John Paul II lays out four distinct marks of the Catholic University. Since the objective of the Catholic University is to assure, in an institutional manner, a Christian presence in the university world confronting the great problems of society and culture, every Catholic university, as Catholic, must have the following essential characteristics. A Christian inspiration, not only of individuals, but of the university community as such. A continuing reflection in the light of the Catholic faith upon the growing treasury of human knowledge to which it seeks to contribute by its own research. Fidelity to the Christian message as it comes to us through the Church. An institutional commitment to the service of the people of God and of the human family in their pilgrimage to the transcendent goal which gives meaning to life. Now I'm going to follow these four through, so this will be the structure for the next bit, taking them one at a time. Christian inspiration, first point. We are to be open to the world, seeking truth wherever it is to be found. We are to engage human culture and seek the synthesis of the divinely revealed faith with the truths of reason. But our focal points for action, study, and reflection are to a certain extent determined by this Catholic character. As the USCCB points out, quoting John Paul II in a speech he gave in 1979, every university or college is qualified by a specified mode of being. Yours is the, speaking to a Catholic university, yours is the qualification of being Catholic, of affirming God, his revelation, and the Catholic Church as the guardian and interpreter of that revelation. The term Catholic will never be a mere label, either added or dropped, according to the pressures of varying factors. So the canon, or that which is taught at this at a school, canon of a medical school is determined by that school's focus on medicine. The canon of a college of engineering is determined by that school's focus on engineering. And so it's not suppression or censorship that an engineering school not have classes on English literature, or that a medical school express a strong distaste for offering classes on the best way to prepare shish kebab. These subjects, while useful and valuable in the broader sphere of human activity, are simply not part of the specialized areas of study that a medical school is created for. Similarly, if West Point were to offer classes in the best way to knit drapes, we might find this a bit unusual for a military school. Or, say, Woodworth would offer classes on why the Pope is always right. Would be excessively odd. You know, so, similarly, Catholic school, you aim at the church first, to a certain, you know, this is your, one of your primary aims. You have the aims of professional preparation, you have the aims of, you know, formation of the human person according to the general human norms, in service and help, you know, concern for the community, the whole people the world needs most. But there's also the Catholic element, and that's going to be a crucial part of the whole university life. Because of this, of course, we shall study Catholic theology before Protestant theology, and Christian theology before non-Christian theology. Of course, we shall study orthodoxy before heterodoxy, and the received teaching of the Church before new speculation. It doesn't mean we won't study heterodoxy, it doesn't mean we won't study Protestant theology, it doesn't mean we won't study everyone else's stuff. It just means that Catholic comes first. And there's nowhere else in this world that you will find a university, you know, absent a Catholic university, you don't find at a Protestant university, the Church comes first. You don't find secular university, the Church comes first. This is the one and only place it's going to happen. And so this is a constitutive part of its identity. And we're going to study the rest of the world as well. We're going to study the history of America, we're going to study the history of Asia, we're going to study the history of the North Pole. But the history of Rome, Western civilization, that sort of thing, this will be the core. This will remain part of the core. This is there because this is part of who we are. We would be foolish to keep ourselves ignorant of the rest of the world, and the Church does not intend this. However, Catholic teaching, this is ex-quote again, Catholic teaching and discipline are to influence all university activities, while the freedom of conscience of each person is to be fully respected. Any official action or commitment of the university is to be in accord with its Catholic identity. So this also would explain certain administrative policies when, you know, any official action or commitment of the university is to be in accord with its Catholic identity. The administration has restrictions in church law on what they can and cannot bring, on what they can and cannot do. In ex corde and, you know, the Jesuits swear a special vow of obedience to the Pope. It's sort of expected that they are obedient to the Pope. The university is doing things not in line with the Pope. This is not fitting in with the church structure as it stands. So our teaching shall be distinct from the teaching of secular universities by the salt, the Catholicism added to every aspect of university life. What ought this to look like? Long quote warning. Namely, the formation of authentic human community animated by the Spirit of Christ. So the key to all of this is Jesus Christ. Because of this, we're going to have the source of its unity springs from a common dedication to the truth, common vision of the dignity of the human person, and ultimately the person and message of Christ, which gives the institution its distinctive character. As a result, he says it best, as a result of this inspiration, the community is animated by a spirit of freedom and charity. It is characterized by mutual respect, sincere dialogue, and protection of the rights of individuals. It assists each of its members to achieve wholeness as human persons. Ensuring everyone in this community helps in promoting unity, and each one, according to his or her role and capacity, contributes towards decisions which affect the community, and also towards maintaining and strengthening the distinctive Catholic character of the institution. This is sort of the golden paragraph, which covers it all. I keep on trying to depart from this, and then it doesn't work. Sorry. This talk of common dedication, common vision, this common vision of Christ, this doesn't sound like a place with room for non-Catholics. Is that what the Holy Father is intending? Is a Catholic university a place where everyone has to accept the Church, Jesus Christ, all the teachings, go to Mass, go to confession, observe Lent, etc., etc., etc.? No. Funnily enough, it is precisely the common vision laid out above that ought to ensure a friendly welcome to non-Catholic students and faculty. Because of the Catholic Christian character of the institution, the community is animated by a spirit of freedom and charity. It is characterized by mutual respect, sincere dialogue, and protection of the rights of individuals. The followers of the Prince of Peace, the Lord of Life and Love, are going far wrong if there is someone who is not experiencing Christian charity on the Catholic home turf. It is because of the Catholic character of the institution that we would welcome anyone who wanted to come and be a part of the university community, provided they are committed to fulfilling their civic duties. Everyone in the community helps in promoting unity, and each one, according to his or her role and capacity, contributes towards decisions which affect the community, and also towards maintaining and strengthening the distinctive Catholic character of the institution. Note, everyone in the community is intended to be committed towards maintaining and strengthening the Catholicism here. This penetration of Catholicism throughout the institution goes beyond a mere set of restrictions on what cannot be done by student clubs, or what speakers cannot come, and so on. By penetration, the Pope means the practice, teaching, and research of the faith is an integral part of the whole university life. Whenever some aspect of the faith is relevant to a discipline, that aspect of the faith is to be introduced in the course of the teaching and scholarly work of that discipline. In a Catholic university, research necessarily includes the search for an integration of knowledge, a dialogue between faith and reason, an ethical concern, and a theological perspective. So this would be true of all disciplines' research. It can be done. In all disciplines, there is some aspect of their teaching and work that intersects with the faith. In ethics, for instance, or the nature and dignity of the human person, or epistemology or metaphysics. You know, the natural sciences come in, especially biology these days, human person. Physics comes in with the nature of the universe, metaphysics. Neurology has epistemology. You know, in every discipline there is some tie-in to the faith. And so room to bring in the Church's teaching and practice. The Holy Father directs a special attention to the dialogue between the Church and the natural sciences. Quick summary here. Especially here, he's intending the dialogue between faith and reason, between, you know, what Father Spitzer does with physics and the God of Abraham with the lecture series, and, you know, the different attempts to look at biology. Dr. Tkach does interesting work in terms of Tobism and rejecting intelligent design, actually, from a theological perspective. You know, this sort of work can be done, should be done, in all disciplines. The truths of the Catholic faith need not be presented merely dogmatically. They can be presented as relevant facts, data points for non-Catholics, and a deeper exploration of their faith and the Church's experience for Catholics. In order to assist these interactions and the synthesis of faith and reason, in Catholic universities where there is no faculty of sacred theology, there should be established an institute or chair of sacred theology in which there should be lectures suited to lay students. That's from Gravissimum Educationis from Vatican II, and Ex Corde Ecclesiae reiterates that, speaking of theology as a special bridge discipline, as a great way of taking the faith and taking the fruits of human reason and bringing them together and seeing how they intersect. So this, the theology department is crucial for the university, the Catholic university, to properly fulfill its mission. By what means shall we implement the third essential point and maintain fidelity to the Christian message as it comes to us through the Church? John Paul II is pretty clear on the need to ensure that teachers at a Catholic university are on board with the mission and identity of the university. Ex Corde declares, "The identity of a Catholic university is essentially linked to the quality of its teachers and respect for Catholic doctrine. It is the responsibility of the competent authority to watch over these two fundamental needs in accordance with what is indicated in canon law." Here's a footnote. A footnote to this section, the Pope makes clear what is indicated in canon law. Canon 810 specifies the responsibility of the competent authorities in this area. It is the responsibility of the authority who is competent in accord with the statutes to provide for the appointment of teachers to Catholic universities, who, besides their scientific and pedagogical suitability, their usual teaching qualifications, in other words, are also outstanding in their integrity of doctrine and probity of life. When those requisite qualities are lacking, they are to be removed from their positions in accord with the procedures set forth in the statutes. The Conference of Bishops and the Diocesan Bishops concerned have the duty and right of being vigilant that in these universities the principles of Catholic doctrine are faithfully observed. So basically what it's aimed at is you're supposed to be not just a teacher of your subject, you're supposed to be a comprehensive teacher. You know, your life is an example. The way you are in the classroom, the way you engage your students, the way you deal with people as a whole is intended to be teaching, following the example of Christ. This does not mean that we hire only people who are utterly without fault, lily-pure saints who have no backstory and who are living the fullness of the faith without doubt or question every day of their lives. If there was enough such people to staff any university, let alone all the Catholic ones, I'd say the apocalypse had come and I'd missed it. A Catholic university will always be, on one level, a community of sinners trying to live and work in such a way as best to allow Christ, the fullness of truth, the essence of true humanity, to enter in. A standard has been set that there's a reason confession is a sacrament. I'm just saying. To this safeguard of oversight, the Holy Father adds the safeguard of number. In order not to endanger the Catholic identity of the university or institute of higher studies, the number of non-Catholic teachers should not be allowed to constitute a majority within the institution, which is and must remain Catholic. It is interesting to note the provisions in place address teachers far more directly than they do the students. We, the students, are a rotating group, here one year and gone the next. It is a rare student who lasts anywhere near long enough to get tenure. Occasional 11 years in college and still going, stories aside. I'd like to know how he did that, that one kid out in the Midwest who's 36 and still in college. It's a good deal. We are not going to be shaping the university community for nearly as long as any of the teachers here. Another interesting note is the absence of any provision regarding ratios of Catholic to non-Catholic students, like the ones regarding Catholic to non-Catholic faculty. Suspect this is because Ex Corde is addressed to the universal church. You're dealing with places where, like China, you couldn't have a public university. You're dealing with places where you could have, you know, bring in the Catholic university, but there would be no Catholic students. So the Holy Father could not mandate Catholic student ratios. So we do not expect the students coming to be Catholic. This is not part of the church's vision. We don't demand this. We do expect the university community sharing a common dedication to the truth, a common vision of the dignity of the human person, and ultimately the person and message of Christ, which gives the university its distinctive character. You don't have to believe it. You don't have to accept it. You don't have to like him. You don't have to like the church. You've got to be able to deal with it. You've got to be able to go, look, there is good here that I can support. There is a vision of the human person that offers dignity, that offers respect, that is a positive thing. And I can live in a community characterized by this. And I can work here, and I can draw what's good and ignore what I don't like. The fourth essential point, an institutional commitment to the service of the people of God and of the human family in their pilgrimage to the transcendent goal which gives meaning to life, relates specifically to the intended relationship between the university and the church, and the university and the human community. USCCB lays out the particular commitments to be made part of the university's governing documents and implemented in practical terms. And quite honestly, when I was looking over this, I thought we were doing a pretty good job, so I wasn't going to spend as much time on that bit. It's basically university ministry, and we have a ton of masses, we have rosaries, we have, you know, occasional retreats, we've got that going to a large extent. Also the service aspect. The service aspect laid out here is a big part of this university's commitment. So this was going to be kind of the short aspect. And the whole thing is available online if you guys want to look at it. A few closing thoughts. There is a great deal more to be drawn from the documents, of course. JP2's vision is awesome. So everyone here should read these documents. You know, don't just take my excerpts and what you've got in here. Go and read them. Take a look at them all. USCCB, they're doing an ongoing 5-year review, or 5-year reviews come out, and we're in the second half of a 10-year review. So there's other documents there. Catholic University, church law does apply, so even for non-Catholics, these would be good things to look at. There's that. Also, there's some Jesuit documents that should be looked at. One final consideration. Will this overall emphasis on Catholicism blind students to the world around them? Would limit their horizons and cramp their understanding, merely reinforcing truths long since learned and not challenging them at all? My dad was a pilot in the Coast Guard for 10 years, so I've lived all over the country. I've been through a bunch of the different CCD programs, talked to a bunch of different people. Our catechism in this country is crap. It's really bad. So most Catholics in America, the community as a whole that I found, is not well-formed. Catechesis has been bad. Truths of faith have not been communicated well for whatever reason. I don't know why. But no, I think the religion classes here have the capacity to actually teach the students here the basics of their faith, which they would not get anywhere else. You know, the Catholic culture of the country, there's not a very strong Catholic culture. This is a non-Catholic country. This is not a sectarian country. And so you don't have that experience of the culture of the faith that you could get at a Catholic university. If we, the university, do not form Catholics in the best fruits of Catholic heritage, then we will produce a great many people who can be swayed by any wind of doctrine, by expediency, by fallacies of all stripes. We do have great things to share with all people, of all cultures, one of which is openness to all the truth in their cultures and their experience. Because we are Catholic, we are to seek and to find reflections of the highest truth wherever we can find it. to plumb the depths and the heights of human culture, human experience. We are to love all men and women as our neighbors, as our brethren, as though they are Christ. We are to welcome all, and to educate all, and to light a lamp of truth and hope for all the world. We are to defend human dignity and human rights. We are to refuse to allow our world to be dragged down into darkness. We are to raise ourselves and all God's beloved, all of humanity, towards Him in community, in compassion, in service, and in truth. Given this great commission to spread the truth throughout all the world, Catholic universities are to be outstanding in the good fruits which they produce. In congruence with the Jesuit zeal for fidelity to the Holy Father, Gonzaga ought to aim for the fulfillment of this great vision set by a great Pope for its Catholic identity.
This is the Gonzaga Socratic Club, and of course Socrates was famous for conversation and discussion, and we value that here, and one way that we promote discussion is by having a respondent to talks that are presented at the Socratic Club. Today we have Anna Gonzalez, who has a BA degree from Cal State University Fresno in communicative disorders. She's been here at Gonzaga since 1999. And just recently completed a Master's of Organizational Leadership. She's worked in student activities and now is the Intercultural Relations Specialist at Unity House. So welcome to Anna Gonzalez.
Hi, everybody. Well, Chris approached me actually all not that long ago to be the respondent for this, and I wasn't quite sure what I was going to get myself into. So I'm going to take my best stab at it, and so we'll see where it goes from there. Chris and I have worked on a lot of different projects together, and so I guess it's only fair that he pulled me into something because I've pulled him into other things. And so what I would like to go ahead and start off with is that, well, I made some notes too, that, you know, first I'd like to say that I have a lot of respect for Gonzaga and the university. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. And so I want to put that forward. But I want you to tell you a little bit about myself and why I think Chris asked me to go ahead and respond. Again, my name is Anna Gonzalez, so I am primarily Latino. And so I would say that it's a fair assumption that if you are Hispanic, that a good, you know, it's more likely than not that you are Catholic. Which is relatively true, although there are a few people out there that aren't. I was raised Roman Catholic and went to Catholic school up until the sixth grade when my parents then got separated and divorced. My mother was old school Catholic and believed that when they got a divorce, she couldn't be a part of the church anymore. So we went church hopping, trying to find a place. I went to Lutheran, Methodist, Episcopalian, Armenian, Orthodox, all different kinds of churches. And so that kind of set me on my way to start questioning my faith. When I was younger, I had total faith in God. I was totally into the Catholic Church and everything. But because of the church hopping aspect, I started questioning it. And so because I couldn't find a home, or we couldn't find a home, we finally ended up in a kind of like, I guess it would be now Universalist, Unitarian type church, I came up with my own personal truths, things that I believed in. And when I started, I'm also part Native, and when I started exploring that side of myself, my family and what have you, I found the Native beliefs and traditions. And everything that I had come to believe as my own personal truths, I found home. And so I am more, I've practiced Native American spirituality than Catholicism now at this point. And maybe I'm one of those, catechisms or what did you call that? I'm a product of that or what have you, I don't know. As a result, I have a very broad perspective. And there's a lot of students who approach me because I am not Catholic, I'm not Christian either. And as you know, on our Gonzaga's campus, you know, we have, I think we're starting to creep up, and I think it's around 51% now that are Catholic and the rest aren't. Of the not, and then the majority of them, I believe it's like about 49% are of a Christian belief, and then 3% are not. and I'm one of those people that are not. But that's just student statistics. I don't know what the staffs are. And Chris and I, we got into a discussion because I found him his freshman year, and we started talking. And one time, a student came in who is not Catholic or Christian, and we were talking about, you know, what it's like to be a non-Catholic on Gonzaga's campus, what it's like to be a non-Christian. And so we had a very interesting talk. You know, I love Chris. He is very open, very moderate, but also very solidly Catholic. And so I think that's why he asked me to come today. And so what I would like to go ahead, and I guess my focus would be on how can we all get along? And so, you know, first off, I'd like to put out that that as non-Catholics, Christians, whatever faith background you come from, we understand that when we come to Gonzaga, that we are coming to a Catholic Jesuit institution. We understand this, we know this, we accept it. You know, doesn't necessarily mean we agree with everything. And we can see it's permeated, as Chris said, throughout the entire campus. I mean, there's a cross above the doorway. We have we let students out for masses. You know, there's the theology class in the core. I'm a part of student life, and so, you know, there's a lot of our meetings that we have that we start with prayers. So, I mean, it's very pervasive that Catholicism is a part of this campus and the university. And so, according to Chris, he says that GU doesn't require its students to be Catholic or Christian, though they need a common dedication to truth, a common vision of the dignity of the human person, and ultimately the person and message of Christ, which gives the institution its distinctive character. The person and message of Christ. That is a great message. You know, I believe that it's a truly good message that everybody should ascribe to. However, it's been my experience, especially since I am no longer Catholic or Christian, that message can be corrupted. That people go ahead and interpret it differently. That, I mean, if you look, there are so many different versions of the Bible out there, and, you know, technically it should all be saying the same thing, but there's different there's different things out there. And every faith has issues. I'm not going to, just pick on Christianity or Catholicism. Every faith has issues. And it can be really confusing as to what that message is by how people interpret it. You know, that there's supposed to be a common dedication to truth. You know, whose truth is that? Understanding that, you know, it's my understanding that the truth, according to Chris, is supposed to lead to God. But who's God? You know, and, you know, is that right? I'd like to throw out there that also perception is reality. We all speak the same language. You would agree that we all speak English, and we all have a basic understanding what that means. We all think in different thoughts and pictures, however. For example, give me a dog. Give me a dog. First one, a German Shepherd? Dog.
Lab.
Dog. Dog.
Collie.
Okay. Now, imagine a road. What's the first thing that pops up into your head? What kind of road? Road.
Some country road.
Now see, I said dog and rope. We all understand what these mean. However, I asked four different people, we had four different dogs. We had four different roads. So, you know, interpretation is very important. We all have different beliefs, values, and assumptions. Or technically we should have common beliefs, values, and assumptions. And it's true that we do. If you think of a person as an iceberg, you know, and we see the top of the iceberg, we see what's out there. But when we get to our core, we have all those beliefs, values, and assumptions. So we all believe in the dignity of the human person. I would say that's true, right? Nobody would disagree that people, you know, we don't agree in that, that we want to go ahead and the opposite of that. Okay? But isn't it also true that the dignity of the human person could go ahead and mean different things to different people, like a road or a dog? You know, for example, the sanctity of human life. Somebody could be for gun control, and somebody could be against it, but they both believe in the sanctity of human life. So it's something to consider. You know, when we're talking about stuff like this, you know, he talked about the autonomy of human culture and logos concepts, which are really good, but we need to understand that there are many paths up the same hill. That, you know, one is not better than the other, or less than. You know, that the way my dad explained it to me is that, you know, if you are a good person and you live your life to be the best person you can be, there's no reason that you shouldn't get to your reward, whatever that might be, heaven, nirvana, whatever. And so I think that's an important concept. So how does Catholicism and Catholic character relate to those who aren't? According to Chris, a Catholic university is supposed to be characterized by mutual respect, sincere dialogue, protection of the rights of the individuals, and it's supposed to challenge faith. So what it comes down to is diversity. Now, some people, as soon as you say that word, automatically turn off. They think diversity, oh, ethnicity. No. Diversity, oh, PC. No. Diversity is much broader than that. It's diversity of thought. It is diversity of ethnicity. It's diversity of ideas. It's diversity of abilities. It's larger than that. And so, how can we go ahead and incorporate that? We can infuse it throughout the campus. It's really something that would be so simple to do, and I think that it can be done without damaging the integrity of the Catholic faith of the campus. I think that, you know, it's just simple little things. And the student, it's been my experience when students tell me that they study like philosophy or history or what have you, although I hear it's changing a little bit, which is great, but what they study is a bunch of dead white guys. And I understand that that, you know, we're supposed to be rooted in the Western culture, but throwing in somebody else every once in a while would be good. You know, and so that's just a real simple, easy thing to do to make this campus maybe a little bit more welcoming. And that, you know, the university should be open and available to everybody. And it should challenge everybody's faith. Not only those who are Catholic, but those who are Christian. Because I believe this is like the best time in life for students. This is a time when you guys have left home and now are kind of on your own, but not really. You're almost there. You know, you've grown up with your parents and that they have gone ahead and formed and shaped you and given you a good foundation. And now it's your turn to either reinforce that foundation that was given to you or to expand it, change it, whatever. And I think that the dialogue can be open to everybody. I think that we could go ahead and, you know, explore our faiths and our beliefs together. That, you know, the big thing, though, is that we need to definitely respect everybody. That, you know, there have been times where Chris and I, we don't agree on it. We don't see eye to eye on things. But we can agree to disagree. And that's okay. And I think that that's one of the big things that needs to be known here, that it's okay to agree to disagree. That just because, you know, I believe something different from him doesn't mean that I like him less. It doesn't mean that, you know, I think he's a bad person or anything like that. It's just his view and my view, we're not going to change because we're both fairly solid in where our beliefs are. And so I think it's being open to those kind of things and not necessarily, like I said, I think Gonzaga is a great place and I don't want to change it. But I would like to see it be a little bit more open and available to people, to all people, regardless of where they come from.
We want to have some questions and discussion. Chris, do you want to say a word of response, or do you want to just go ahead and open up?
Let's go ahead and open up.
Okay.
Let's talk a while.
All right. Questions?
I'll let you guys take the questions.
You can direct them to either of them or both of them, however you'd like.
Doug, go ahead and get started.
I'll ask a question about students, since most of the people here today are students. Chris said one thing I thought quite interesting that I'd never noticed before, that Ex Corde Ecclesiae talks more about faculty and proportions of Catholic faculty and so forth rather than students, which I guess is obvious enough, but it's something that I had never noticed before. Anna Gonzalez talked about the composition of the present student by Gonzaga in terms of what percent are Catholic and Christian and so forth. There is a question here. I'm heading to here's a problem I have, I guess perhaps the best word is it seems to me that if faculty are supposed to do this integration of faith and reason and work to bring all of the disciplines into conversation with Christianity, we sort of need the cooperation of students to do this. A few anecdotes. I can remember a couple of years ago, I'm following around and heading into the library. I'm behind one of these students who's giving tours of the university to prospective students. And one of the students asked something like, "Now, Gonzaga is a Catholic university, isn't it?" And the person directing the tour, appointed by the university to do this job, said, "Well, yeah, but don't worry about that." That's interesting. I just recently sat down with a very junior faculty member going over some of her student evaluations. This faculty member had a practice of offering a brief prayer at the beginning of the course. Some of the students in their evaluations just lit into her for doing this. I can also indicate, I'll just say that it oftentimes comes up in my own courses when I try to do this integration of faith and reason that Ex Corde and other church documents ask of us. There are students who rebel, okay? And I wouldn't worry about it too much. You know, I haven't been there. But these same students, they do fill out the evaluation forms and they mark faculty down for that. And you better believe that that reappointment committees and so forth pay attention to those numbers. And then beyond that, I mean, it's just a lot easier if you're walking into a classroom full of students who do want to learn something about Christianity. So my question is, do you think we can really sort of rest satisfied with having a student body that's either, if not openly antagonistic towards Christianity or Catholicism, at least not very interested in
it? I suppose that's me. I think what you're dealing with partly is American culture to a certain extent, especially modern American culture. Also, I think to a certain extent, the university would be well served by making a lot of this more explicit in the admissions process, in the hiring of faculty, in the different aspects. People are supposed to come in and know what the church expects. They're not supposed to be operating blindly. It doesn't mean they need to agree. They need to agree to work within it. They don't need to be a big fan of the Catholic Church. But they need to be aware of it, because apostolic constitution is church law and is we're a Catholic university and so it applies to us. I don't know to what extent Gonzaga has really
mentioned a lot of this in its admissions literature. You know, Protestant nation, most people don't think about the hierarchy. They don't think of, well, Rome might have something to say with what happens in Spokane, Washington. But it does, both through the Jesuit and the Catholic avenues. So I think I'd say the advertising would be to push a really good opportunity is this new Be Inspired campaign and the growth program. Trying to mention that, look, we need to incorporate this. This is important. We're professors are getting caught up in this, and students are coming and sometimes being surprised by some of the stuff that cannot happen, that must happen.
I think part of it, too, is the going back to what Chris said about bad catechism or what have you, is that I don't think that the message is very constant or consistent. That's it. Thank you. Very consistent. Depending on where you are and where you go, and that especially as a non-Catholic, non-Christian type, that sometimes when we try to explore that particular avenue, we tend to get evangelized to, and so that tends to shut us down. And so because we don't want to change our faith because we're quite happy with where we are at this point in our lives, you know, it makes conversations difficult and challenging. And so I think there's part of that might be happening as well is, and not saying that, you know, well, again, the majority are still of Christian faith or what have you, but also, you know, I've been talked to by other people who are non-Catholic, and that there is this tendency to evangelize a little bit, and so that tends to be, that's just not very welcoming.
Well, I was going to say, so maybe it seems to me that the line of your thought is headed to that maybe I shouldn't do these things.
Well, not necessarily that you shouldn't do these things. I just think that the problem is that there's no consistent message that's out there, and maybe it's an approach. I don't know.
A consistent message, I don't think.
The consistent message of Catholicism in general, I mean, because you have the whole spectrum of Catholic, liberal, Catholic, conservative, you know, people interpreting it to mean what they think. So, I don't know.
I have a lot of comments. First, that's all, is I appreciate you telling us your story because that helps us to understand who you are and where you're coming from. And the second comment I have is that you made a comment that the dignity of the human person should be something that all of us hold as a common thought. And I would argue that the dignity of the human person has not yet been articulated in such a way that everyone does hold to the same dignity of the human person. Maybe one person's dignity of the human person might be, don't you tell me that my inner core was created by God and that living in, with, and through Him is where I'm going to find my greatest happiness because my greatest core is my own pre-transcendent, my dignity is being who I create myself to be. I pick myself up off of my own, with my own bootstraps and I do my own thing and so forth. More of a functional situation there. Okay. I'm comments because here the other thing we were talking about, you just said something really telling too. You were saying that this isn't defined. We've got the liberal and the traditional Catholic and everything in between. Now you're right on there. Diversity. It's not defined. What we've got is form tradition, which is how we live out our Catholic faith, how we see fit, and the faith tradition, and it deforms us. It deforms us. It happens when a mother is left by her husband and unless, you know, there's, the truth is, you know, that you can get into that, but going to the source and finding where the healing and reconciliation happens for a family that has that kind of brokenness. Anyway, I don't think Gonzaga diversity is the answer. It's not Gonzaga diversity, it's Gonzaga University. And I really feel strongly that we have to get to the truth of what the dignity of the human person really means. Is it just letting everybody do their own thing and being respectful of them? Or to tell them, wait a minute, we are creatures given by God with a transcendent, the gift of a transcendent dynamic to love the different, the persons lost and found, and to respect them where they're at in their stories. And that's what I think is what you mean by diversity, is just loving the individual unique human soul. Right? This thought that one truth is better than all others, or every, you know, every truth, you know, relativism is just crazy. But anyway, does that make any sense?
Well, and I would, and I would say that the dignity of the human person, what I was talking about, is that we have, again, the belief, values, and assumptions, and it means something different to everybody. So, you know, the value of life, the dignity of the human person, my perception and interpretation of that could be different than yours because of the way I was formed and the way you were formed. And I'm not saying that it's right or wrong or indifferent. I'm just saying that it's different, and that we need to understand that when we're talking, because the road and the dog, that when we're talking about our roads and our dogs, that we're interpreting things differently. And so I think that needs to be taken into consideration.
That was the other thing you said, that language that English is something we should all understand, and that is somewhat true, but language is colored by our form traditions.
Right, and that's why I did the dog in the road. That's why I did the dog in the road, is to show that we don't necessarily see the same things. That we're saying the same words, but our understanding of them is different, or can be different.
If a Catholic university was on the path of teaching the truth about the dignity of the human person, all the other things would fall into place. That's the truth.
I think to a certain extent, a large part. Yes, the relativism and objectivism thing is an issue, but I think we've moved beyond that now. It's rarely sheer relativism or sheer objectivism. It's kind of, what are the foundational truths that that must be understood? Rules of logic, rules of meaning, and what are the truths that there are the different understandings of? And I don't think that's been defined quite, you know, some of the stuff about the liberal conservative Catholic bit. It's really, in America especially, the really ill-defined distinction between those things which are the faith, and if you're absent from those, you're not in the faith, and those things that are, well, we can disagree. You know, we haven't. That needs to be recaptured. You know, to assert dignity of the human person. You know, what aspects of that at a Catholic university must be a common vision? And what aspects of that, you know, what understanding of that need not be? You know, at what level in the hierarchy of truths must we be in order to fulfill the church's vision, and what's the leeway? I don't know if that helps at all.
David, do you have a question?
Yes, I was going to say, with interpretations of ideas, do you think, could the university do a better job of, or is it doing a good enough job? And I think you might have already answered this, but maybe then how could the university do a better job of conveying a clear picture of what Catholic identity is to students, so that from both perspectives, the Catholic identity of what the church dictates is what a Catholic university should be is made very clear to professors and students, and then from the perspective of non-Catholics, non-Christians, or people who disagree, can be, they can be welcomed and and have a clear vision of what that's supposed to be rather than a messy one. Do you think, I guess first, do you think that that message is not being conveyed very clearly? And then if so, how could it be conveyed better?
All right, I'll do it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's being conveyed very clearly at all, hence the fact that we actually have been having the arguments we've been having, you know, and the misunderstandings, and the fact that Anna's had to deal with some of the diversity crisis issues. I mean, Catholic University, there is no room for racial discrimination, there is no room for ethnic discrimination, there is no room for sexual orientation, for true homophobia. You know, we respect human people. We respect humans. We respect all humans. There is a certain base center of human value and dignity that all humans have, and you do not violate that at a Catholic university. The fact that she's got to deal with that from drunken people and whatever else, there's something wrong. Yeah, that's even worse. It's formation on all levels. It's that understanding on all levels. And it's not. Again, a lot of it is American church. We have not been good at actually forming in the faith for a while, and not getting the definitions straight. The university, I think, you know, best served by putting out Ex Corde. By putting out Ex Corde more. The Pope and the USCCB in their documents keeps on talking about the fruitful dialogue in the university community about Ex Corde. You know, it's supposed to be a topic of discussion. It's supposed to be engaged. It's supposed to be dealt with. It's not supposed to be something that we just ignore, because then you just end up with where we are now with culture wars at the university level. We're not supposed to have that. We're supposed to have a community of love, of freedom, of truth, a community that engages in study of all truth, that's welcoming to all people who are willing to participate, who are willing to, you know, go to that certain Catholic level for the 4 years, however long they're here. It's supposed to be a lot better than it is, I think. So,
Margaret?
Oh, did you have?
Well, no, that doesn't answer how, though.
How? I think, at this point, I think just awareness is the first step, and then then we can have the fruitful conversation. Mm-hmm. People are actually aware of it.
Margaret?
Louder. Yes, the best way.
That said, the Gonzaga is an institution, or any Catholic institution that is secure in its status as a Catholic school, and with that being taught by the Church, how would you present yourself as a secure Catholic institution without that coming across? It just seemed like some comments were being made that students might be offended by it being suggested that the Catholic faith was the best. Is there a way to have a secure Catholic school without presenting the Church as the best way to challenge?
Well, I think that it's the and I don't know if I'm the best person to answer this, but it's the you know, it's the best way to salvation. However, I think that the thing is that as a non-Catholic, you know, you can talk about your faith, which is fine, and I don't mind, and I enjoy, you know, having spiritual conversations. It's when I'm evangelized to that it tends to shut people down. And so I think that if there is a way to go ahead and have just the conversations without pushing a change, that would be probably the best way, you know. And Chris and I have had these conversations before, and so, and he's tried to get me to go back to church. I'm not gonna lie, he has. But he's not pushy about it, you know. He's very subtle in the way that he does it, and he leads more by example rather than saying, "You really need to go to church, you know. I gotta save your soul." And I had people that, you know, did talk to me and say, you know, "You're going to go to hell if you don't do this," and I don't want to hear that. That's not how you're going to convince me to change, is to try to put the fear of God into me, you know, if he's supposed to be kind and loving and just, you know. So, yeah, I think that we can have these spiritual dialogues and just understand that I may not agree with you, or students who think like I do, who are not Catholic or who are not Christian, may not agree, and that's okay that we don't agree.
I'd say the philosophy department usually does a fantastic job. you know, there is no doubt with, like, Dr. Kreese, Dr. Hillen, where they stand when it gets onto those topics. But it's always presented factually. You know, you do not have to present it as, you know, demanding that the students always be within the worldview. You can present it as, here's the church, here's the church's claims, here's the Catholic worldview. An atheist could present it perfectly faithfully to the faith and still accept none of it. And you would have that firm Catholic identity present. You know, I think that could be done. Philosophy, actually, traditionally, that seems to be what philosophy's job was sort of the middle way. Let's look at all of it. We're not just going to keep ourselves out here because of whatever concern. We're going to look at all of it. Socrates and other people getting put to death as great examples of this. I think it could be done that way. I think right now the mindset is you go Catholic, oh God, you've gone completely with the organizational program and there's no way back. It's not true. You can present the faith without believing the faith. You can defend the faith without believing the faith. You can explain it without accepting any of it. And you can enjoy the fruits of it without being part of it, to a certain extent. Okay, Eric, you were first.
you mentioned that the Catholic Catechism in America was inadequate in educating a lot of Catholics in the Catholic faith, and that the Jesuit schools provide a place where you can get a lot of, education, indoctrination, where...
That's a really bad way of putting it.
I was just wondering if, in your opinion, and the Church's opinion, are these Jesuit institutions, is that an indoctrination in the faith? Is that an essential aspect of the church, or not the church, but of these schools? And if so, should it be made very clear to non-Catholic students who are coming to these institutions that that is a part of the education, so they don't go into classes like Dr. Creese's and complain about this marriage between faith and reason in the class?
Well, see, I think what you're dealing with, the marriage between faith and reason is actually more of a philosophical quest than a specifically Catholic quest, first of all. You know, ancient roots. And so I don't think if you're gonna speak of indoctrination, that wouldn't be the place to start. Secondly, I don't think that the study of the faith or the catechesis is really gonna be indoctrination. I think that it's not a friendly term. I think people need to be aware of coming to a Catholic school, it's going to be Catholic. We're going to present the faith. We're going to present the faith believing in the faith. We're going to present the faith in communion with Pope. You know, this should be an expectation, and especially at the Jesuit school, where this is part of the core. You know, the religion classes are part of the core that all students must take. I think that you have the idea of formation of the person in the image of Christ. Now, if that's indoctrination, then all Christians are guilty of this. In fact, all religions are guilty of that, insofar as they try to get their followers to adhere to a standard. Atheists would be included in that they try to get their atheists to adhere to what they call sheer reason or materialism. You know, you can't be an atheist and believe in God. It's sort of an awkward place to be. This is a doctrine of atheism, you know, if you will. You must believe this to be an atheist. If you believe in God, you're not an atheist. Unfortunately, they're not broad-minded enough to have theistic atheists. You know, so Catholic school, there will be Catholic teaching. I don't think there needs to be specific warning, because Jesuit, Catholic, humanistic, and the mission, you can find this in the literature.
to that extent there's a warning. I think that more specific norms of ex corde should be more emphasized. I don't know if this answers the question.
Oh, yeah, I think it does. But it just, somehow a lot of students apparently are coming through and getting into these classes, and they don't realize just how Catholic some of the focus is going to be before they even get there. Maybe they miss something, but should there be a greater emphasis on
earlier, I think the literature needs to be clearer, but...
Well, also, you know, you have to remember way back in your freshman year, you went through orientation. Everybody technically should have gone through orientation, and there's a whole component when you went through all those different sessions that we talked about faith. And so, I mean, that should have been at least an introduction. I've sat in a few times, and, you know, Father Gantz has done an awesome job, you know, explaining what it's like to be at a Catholic Jesuit campus, you know, and to make everybody welcome. So, you know, if everybody attends orientation and goes to the sessions like they're supposed to, then they should at least, if nothing else, at that point, be introduced to the whole concept.
Peter?
Okay. My question was a real practical one. I guess, I don't know about literature and saying, well, I came here for basketball too, so I don't know.
Okay. Of course.
But my question was, you talked about how you need to maintain your Catholic identity, but that you need to invite people while faith, but you also made the point that everyone at the school needs to contribute to the identity of the school. Mm-hmm. On a very practical level, if I'm atheist, if I have homosexual tendencies, if I'm Protestant, if I don't believe there's God, whatever, how am I going to, on a practical level, contribute to the identity of a Catholic university if I'm not Catholic?
I think the fact that the broad diversity of people who go on the retreats is, you know, one instance of the way it does work. You do get people of all sorts on those things, and UM does quite a good job of the building of community through that. I think a lot of people, for whatever reason, find themselves having a really hard time approaching the Catholic faith the way they approach other faiths. Because there's a ton of people who will just go to a Jewish synagogue and watch that and think, oh, this is a good cultural experience. Have a Passover dinner. Go to the Hindu temple. Go to the Muslim mosque. Or you know, different prayer services of whatever sort. Oh, I had a good cultural experience. Catholic Church is kind of, oh my God. I don't quite understand the difference in reaction. I think you could do the same thing with us. We, the weird Catholics of the world. Go to Mass. You could just sit there. You really can just sit there. It doesn't matter that everyone else is standing up. Just sit, pick a nice back seat and watch. It's culture. This is part of Europe's European heritage, American heritage, you know, nowadays world heritage. This is one more faith community to get in touch with. You don't need to accept any of it. But go to that St. Sebastian rally on the quad or whatever they're at, you know. Whatever you have, you know, the Saints feast days. Go to All Souls Day. Go to All Saints Day. Ask a Catholic friend, you know, just inquire. And, you know, if you have ever lived anywhere near an evangelical church, you ran the risk of being preached at. Come on, guys. The Catholic Church is really bad at evangelizing. For Pete's sake, we're you know, evangelical likelihood to evangelize, Catholic likelihood to evangelize. If this is a concern, you know. Anyway, it's that sort of... Okay.
Well, also, though, too, I would say that, you know, Chris said that part of the Catholic identity piece was that you're supposed to be open to exploring other cultures. And so I would argue that the non-Catholics being here is a way to explore one-on-one with all the other cultures. I mean, if you're supposed to be open to them, how else are you supposed to go ahead and know about them or find out about them if they aren't here?
I wasn't going to go there because Uma got really mad at that.
Well, yeah, but anyway, Uma's not here. And
okay.
Here's a good question.
All right, Peter?
I'm going back to the metaphor of the roads and the dogs. Well, things like what you're talking about is kind of agree to disagree in terms of diversity of thought and views. And I kind of see that as conflicting with the university's search for truth. And having some sort of institutional policy of agreeing to disagree seems to contradict Catholic University's search for truth, kind of like abandoning the search for truth at some point. And I wonder if you could comment on that.
I would say that, you know, that part of the dialogue, though, is where some of that happens. That Chris and I, we've had exchanges on a variety of different topics, although we agree on Harry Potter, so that's good.
That's excellent.
but that that also going back to the dog in the road, my truth may be different than your truth. So my personal truth may not be yours, but together we can go ahead, and I think the thing is to have a respectful debate with each other, because the only way I gain understanding is if you and I can dialogue and to bring up different points that challenge each other's ideas, and that at some point we also have to realize that, hey, you know, we probably aren't going to change, and let's continue this discussion, you know, let's stop, let's agree to disagree. I mean, because there's been some stuff that that come up on a semi-regular basis, every once in a while issues come up where, you know, we have a different discussion about a particular issue or topic, and it's a little bit different, you know, and it gives me a greater understanding and insight into where he's thinking, and I hope that I give him greater understanding and insight to what I'm thinking. But at the same time, you know, I have my personal truth, and I found that for myself, and Chris has his personal truth, which he's found for himself. And so, again, it's whatever you define as your personal truth.
I think the level at which it could work is the idea of a university. It's not that you just go, oh, you know, isolated aspects of truth. It's, well, you claim this, and we think this. And you keep on talking about it. And that it's through that you pursue the truth. You know, you don't... People will convert in God's good time. They will not convert if you yell at them louder or if you're more persistent, because that usually turns off. You know, it's a matter of agreeing on the fundamentals, finding the level of dogma, finding the level of what on the university level must be. You know, the fundamental bits of Ex Corde, the common vision of human dignity, and, you know, that common commitment to the person and message of Christ, which, you know, which is much better defined in the Catholic Church than in the Christian community as a whole. And so we have a much better foundational base to work from. You know, on the level of individual interaction, no, having the diversity of ideas does not necessarily conflict with the pursuit of truth, so long as they're willing to work within the church's boundaries and submit to the rules of logic, basically. You know, as long as we accept, I don't think you would deny the existence of an objective reality.
No.
I think you would say more of looking at it from the different angles.
Right.
Yeah, and so, you know, and the Catholic Church could go along with this in that. Only we would say that, well, and the truth itself came and showed up and said, hello, guys, have some fish, you know. And so it's, I think we can have the diversity of opinions so long as it remains in the opinion realm to a certain extent. You know, it remains opinions where it needed to be reigned at opinions, and doesn't, as long as we're Catholic, and you're willing to go along with the Catholicity, you can have whatever belief you want, basically.
Would another way to ask your question be that dialogue doesn't make any sense unless we believe that we're converging on a truth? Is that what you're getting at, Peter?
Yes.
So, I mean, if our conversation really is at the level of we're going to just be different and we have differences, then, well, we already know that there are constraints to that. If I say, you know, that I believe that random people should be shot or tortured just because I like it, then we're going to say, well, that's a view that can't be admitted into a dialogue or conversation. Or it certainly can't be. You might want to find out why I hold this view, rather than saying, oh, well, that's a view that we have to embrace and respect and have tolerance for.
Well, but see, I think the distinction there, though, would be is that you can have a person with that view at the university,
The view will not be part of the university. This is what we hold as acceptable, but the person can be. You know, we can educate a genocidal maniac just like we can, you know, educate the next St. Francis. But so long as they're both, you know, the next St. Francis will have an easier time of it probably than the genocidal maniac, I think. But
well, that does mean that we can't give up the evangelical or formative aspect of education, because the whole point would be to convert or change the views of a homicidal or a genocidal maniac.
I think
we wouldn't want to say, well, this is a view that we need to continue to reflect on try to understand the deep meaning of. I mean, once you understand anything about justice, you're going to see that someone trying to articulate a good justification for genocide isn't going to be persuasive.
I think, though, the university would be not the, and we're doing surgery and we're plucking bits out and we're sticking bits in. I think it's more of you're sticking them into the bath. And if they want to, you know, they can get, if the person's a sponge, they can absorb that worldview. You know, the worldview must remain constant. The bathwater's got to remain that, right, that catholicity, that constituting the culture and what you participate in. But, you know, we're not supposed to do radical surgery on the student to correct the worldview. We're supposed to give them the immersive experience more.
Well, I would also say that through the dialogue that eventually it's possible that, you know, before Chris graduates, I might change my mind, or it's possible he might change his mind on some of the stuff that we disagree.
Right.
Well, no, but it's possible.
Yeah.
So you can't deny that it's possible. Probable, maybe, but probably not, but we'll see. But so that you can go ahead and come to a truth through the dialogue and through the discussion. You know, it just doesn't happen immediately. It's not going to change. It's like Tris might eventually get me to go to church, but that's not going to happen, you know, overnight. I'm not going to say, oh, I'm going to go back to church. I've found the Catholic faith again. You know, it's going to take, you know, gentle whatever on Chris's part, and then me being open and accepting to the possibility of doing something like that. So it's being open and accepting with this dialogue that's going on, this ongoing dialogue, and that eventually somebody might change their mind, you know, that could happen, or at least their perception on the issue. So there is a possibility that, again, in student time versus staff time is also different, too. I mean, student time, it seems like we move at a glacial pace compared to what they want, you know, and they want it all now because they're only here for 4 years, and then they're gone, and then we're still here. And so we understand that change, whatever that takes time, and then it's not going to happen immediately, whereas students want immediate change before they're gone. And so the same thing with dialogue and what have you in conversations with people.
Maybe one more question?
Yeah. Cool.
Let's thank our speakers once again.